But what happens to it after that? And there was this kind of silence where I realized I asked a question that I wasn't supposed to ask. This was like something they don't tell people. And he really started to get kind of annoyed. He became irritable. He became noticeably irritable with me. And he started snapping at me and saying, you know, we don't even do it with catalogs. If that's what you're asking about, with catalogs and stuff like that, we don't forward that stuff. I said, look, you don't understand. I haven't gotten any mail. I'm not asking about catalogs. I'm asking, where's any of my mail? So anyway, I said, look, what's the next thing? What's the next thing that happens? Where does it go? And there was this little silence, and I realized that I'd asked about something that you're not supposed to ask about. So finally he said, it goes off-site. And I said, well, what does that mean? Well, there's some kind of other, I mean, I can't even imagine what this is. But it was like this mysterious place that's not a post office, I could tell. I mean, he was even uncomfortable using the term off-site. So anyway, my mail goes someplace, and I just don't know where. And I don't know where my mail is right now. So if you know where my mail is, I mean, we continued this conversation for a while, and he just got more and more irritable at me. And I finally said, you know, you sound irritable, and I'm the one who hasn't gotten any mail in all this time. Anyway, our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. There's a bunch of topics that we're longing to chat with you about. Once again, 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. The topics before us, well, they are innumerable. I did want to share with you a little quote from President Bush. He was on Larry King talking about why he sat in the elementary school classroom for 7 minutes on the morning of September 11th. And he said, well, I had just been told by Andrew Card that America was under attack, and I was collecting my thoughts. So now we know he was collecting his thoughts. Anyway, as I mentioned before, we're going to have Gail Collins on. She's going to talk a little bit about the New York City Convention, the Republican Convention coming to New York, and the impact on that. And also Gorman Burchard, the coolest man in Connecticut. He'll be talking about a wide range of topics, such as only he can talk about. A few things. John Kerry has now granted an interview to GQ. This is probably kind of unwise. But among the things that he talks about are, he talks about women, unfortunately, which is, well, I mean, not unfortunately. What he has to say about women is actually kind of interesting. But he talks about who the sexiest women in movies are. He talks about the fact that he thinks, I mean, these are unoriginal responses. They ask him who the sexiest women are in movies, and he says, I think Charlize Theron is pretty extraordinary, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Marilyn Monroe. So we need this man to tell us that Charlize Theron, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Marilyn Monroe are sexy women in movies. Yeah, he says about Marilyn Monroe, I thought she was funny, complicated, and obviously very attractive, very beautiful. At least he didn't just say she was sensitive. And then he talks about what to look for in a woman. Look for what, actually, this is pretty good advice. This is a better answer to this question than President Bush could have given. Look for what gets your heart, someone who excites you, turns you on. It's a quality of character, a kind of presentation, sense of womanhood, full woman, confident. It's a woman who loves being a woman, who wears her womanhood, who knows how to flirt and have fun, smart, confident, has a sense of self, strong, and obviously sexy and saucy and challenging. This is John Kerry on being a bachelor in Washington. Those were not good days. I think if you ask anyone, Bob Kerry or anyone... No, who did Bob Kerry go out with? Did Bob Kerry... He went out with Deborah Winger, right? Anyway, John Kerry says, those were not good days. I think if you ask anyone, Bob Kerry or anyone who's been single on Capitol Hill, you'll find it's no fun. I don't believe that, frankly. I mean, maybe he didn't have any fun, but I don't actually happen to believe that it's no fun for anybody to be single on Capitol Hill. I could be wrong. Now, that's not a good world, and everyone wants a piece of you, and all I can say is thank God I found Teresa. Now, here's the weirdest thing that he talks about in this interview. He claims that Marlon Brando was obsessed with Iran-Contra. And he says he took a huge interest in it, and he would call me. He was always asking questions, and he'd give me advice. I took his advice on a couple of angles, a couple of points. He took Marlon Brando's advice about Iran-Contra. That's a little disturbing. I mean, it, you know, an interesting thing about Kerry, though, is Christopher Hitchens, who doesn't particularly like John Kerry, one thing that he says in a book review he did on Sunday is that John Kerry was one of the most effective, if not the most effective, senator on Iran-Contra, that he was head of some subcommittee that was presiding over the Iran-Contra stuff, and he was incredibly good at weeding out the rumors from, you know, the false rumors from the actual, you know, misdeeds that were going on, and that he was, you know, he played an enormously helpful role, and he actually did get kind of to the bottom of things to whatever extent that was possible. The stuff that he pursued was actually helpful or useful. Anyway, let's go to the phones here. Let's talk to Joe from Granby. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Love your show. Hey, I'm a letter carrier, so I got an idea on what's going on.
All right.
You used to live in West Hartford, correct?
Well, actually, I forwarded my mail. I was living in Hartford, and I started forwarding my mail to West Hartford. Does that shoot your theory to ribbons?
No, not at all.
Okay.
But you used to live in West Hartford,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Did you forward it to Hartford?
I never forwarded to Hartford, no.
Okay. Okay. So...
But now I'm forwarding from Hartford to West Hartford.
How did it get from West Hartford to Hartford?
Well, I mean, I just switched all my mail and got it all going there. So you're
okay.
Asking me if at some point I did... I understand what you're asking, but I don't think I did that.
Okay, so you changed all your addresses to Hartford, and then you had it shipped from Hartford to West Hartford.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably what's happening is, what happens is when the mail comes in, and it's to be forwarded.
Yeah.
Okay, if they have a regular carrier on there every day, which is a possibility or not a possibility, he will know whether or not to forward the mail. If he doesn't know to forward it, then he'll deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be in the box the next day, and he'll pick it up. And then what he does, he brings it back to the office, sends it to CFS, that central forwarding system, which is in Hartford.
Yeah.
And it takes time for it to process in Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
To get back to West Hartford.
I see. That central forwarding system thing, that's the thing that I asked about, and the guy became defensive.
Yeah, well, it's a system that can work really well.
Yeah.
But if, like I say, if we're having a problem with employees as far as having employees. They haven't hired in quite a long time, so we have a lot of different people on different routes that are not covered. So that could be part of the problem.
I have the distinct feeling you and I could be killed just for having this conversation.
I know, you're absolutely right.
All right, we have to go then. We can't continue this anymore. Then we'll take a little break and we shall return.
The airbag in your car. The smoke detector in your home.
Tired of getting an answering machine?
Bought a post office. And there's something about this in the New York Times today about somebody buying a post office in Vigo Park, Texas, which I think was for sale on eBay. But I almost bought this post office. It was one of the post offices in Canton, and it came with a house I was thinking about buying. And you bought the post office, and you rented it to the U.S. Postal Service for, I can't remember, it was like $100 a month or so. It wasn't very much. But there was some income. And not only that, but I would have had my own post office. I would have owned a post office. And I am I'm someone who enjoys mail a great deal, and I even enjoy the existence of the U.S. Postal Service, so that idea kind of pleased me. But then I talked to the postmistress there, and she wanted a new roof and a new floor and all this kind of stuff, so I realized I would just have one other set of obligations that I wouldn't be able to fulfill. Here's Ralph, who's with us. Hi, Ralph.
Colin.
Yes.
Sorry you're having a problem. We can fix it.
Okay.
First of all, your first caller was partially correct. The CFS unit is a central unit where all the mail goes,
yeah,
that is forwarded, and it is postal employees. They're not, it's off-site in that it's not at individual post offices. It's one central unit, but they are postal employees.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's not like Ewoks or something like that, are there?
These are postal employees, they're actually higher-level employees in that they get paid higher-level because they do very tedious and very technical work with machines.
Yeah.
Put these labels on forwarded mail.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know whether you can say, whether you can give me this info, you know, on the air, but if you tell me where, what, you know, you probably lived in the downtown area.
Well, I shouldn't tell you all this stuff, too, because I don't want to get special treatment. I kind of want to see how this whole thing will play out at this point. Let me just
tell you, this probably what is happening is that if you live in Zone 6, which I'm figuring that you live in Zone 6, your zip code, that it's a zone that there's lots of vacations going on.
Yeah.
They're very difficult routes, a lot of city routes. They have lots of people.
So the idea would be to just
fill in on those routes. They may be putting mail in your box, and somebody has not moved in that apartment yet, and it could be collecting in there.
All right, thanks very much. That's another thing for me to worry about. Oh, no. I know the person who moved in. I don't know what she would do. Let's talk to Tom in West Hartford. Hi, Tom.
No. Oh, hi. How's it going?
Just fine.
I was getting depressed today, learning about swift boats. So I came with a little poem, but it's not done. How fast could a swift boat go if a swift boat could, like, chop wood? But, you know, it doesn't make any sense, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
So it's not quite completed, is what you're saying. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Oh, could I put Samantha on? Something's going on in New Jersey.
Okay. Then.
Hi, I'm Samantha.
Yes.
I'm about ready to get onto the Greyhound bus, you know, to go to, because apparently the governor down there got caught with his pants down by the wife. Well, where was I? Oh, no one ever called me for the party. Well, I'm off.
Enjoy New Jersey. Have a great time. Say hi to everybody in Newark and Trenton for us. Bye-bye, Samantha. All right, our numbers are, I shouldn't even give out the phone numbers after calls like that, but the numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Star WTIC. Coming up as the show rolls merrily along. Are we going to be out now? Okay, we'll be out now, and we'll tell you more later.
Let's be honest.
Right now, you're just talking to me. I'll take two more calls about this mail thing, and then we have to move on. People just tuning in, I've raised this mystery. It's of interest primarily to me, although it turns out there's a smattering of other people who are interested, which is where my mail is. That's the mystery. I forwarded my mail from one location to another a month ago, and it just never showed up at the new location. I don't know. It's hard to say anything for certain about the mail, as it turns out. It's interesting how many people I've talked to who work for the United States Postal Service who have different theories about where my mail is or what happened to my mail. I mean, you'd think that the U.S. Postal Service would speak with kind of one voice about this process, but they really don't. I mean, they have like different, it's like the Kennedy assassination or something. They have different ideas about what exactly had happened to it. Anyway, let's talk to Dave in his car. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, look, you know, I don't know if you remember, but a while back you were talking about moving and all of that.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, you could rent one of those woodland moving pods.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about feng shui, and you could arrange your pod in some sort of feng shui. I'm just thinking if you'd actually moved into the pod.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't have as much problem getting that mail out to New Britain or whatever their house is.
The pods are so matrix. I think in the future we probably all will live in pods.
Yeah, and you could just move it to different towns.
Yeah, as your mood took you. You know, maybe you just have the pod dropped out in the reservoir for a couple of days until somebody could, yeah.
Well, look, take care and good luck on your last mail call.
All right, thanks very much. Bye-bye. And pod life forever. All right, I'm taking one more call about this, and we really are moving on to something else because it's not that interesting. We'll talk to Joel in his car. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Colin. How are you?
Fine.
You know, that last comment about pods is interesting. My wife seems to feel that, you know, if we took all of the homeless and we gave them their own toll booth,
yeah,
then they collected money all day long, and, you know, maybe once a week somebody would come in from the state with a hose, blast it out, and rob them, and they would have their home, the state would have their money, and no cost for toll employees. But maybe your mail problem could be solved if you went on eBay and bought your own zip code.
Yeah.
I really didn't think that the other postal employees' comments about it taking a higher level of person to sort that mail because they had to put stickers on. They're self-stick stickers. They didn't have to lick them.
No, that's true. But, clearly that's one way to do it, is just to buy in, get a post office. They are for sale. As I say, I almost bought the one in Canton. There's a thing in the New York Times today about one that was for sale on eBay, I think.
No, just buy the zip code. Just buy the zip code. Then you get a royalty for anyone else within that zip code that wants their mail.
Yeah. See, I didn't want to have to work for change from within. I wanted just to get my
mail. Yeah, I had a friend of mine that used to run a zip code machine for the post office, and they had to handle five pieces of mail in a phenomenally short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, come on now, didn't you ever see when it came up and it said Bloomfield? And you said, Bloomfield.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, thanks for your comments. We're all done talking about mail. I'd like to thank everybody who called in, everybody who helped out, everybody who had a constructive suggestion. That was great. We'll just sit down and we'll just see how long it takes my mail to get here. But I want to close by saying, in general, I have nothing but admiration for the U.S. Postal Service. I mean, they do a great job. This is really almost the first time in my 49 years where I've been able to say, you know, that I am a dissatisfied Postal Service customer. But, I mean, by and large, I think they do a great job, and I think mail is a good thing, and I enjoy getting it. And that's the problem. I like mail so much. Anyway, we're moving on. We have other things to talk about. Well, I have to share this. This is a completely weird thing that nobody else has reported on so far, but I feel the need to tell you about it. I don't even know exactly what it means. But for those of you who get the New Yorker, like, for those of you who, like, the New Yorker comes in the mail, for example, okay, you pampered jerks, I resent you so much. Anyway, if you just dig back, a lot of you got your new New Yorker today, okay? I'm not talking about that issue of the New Yorker. Go back to the previous one. It's stated, it's a two-issue, August 9th and 16th. It's the one that has the Grecian urn on the cover and the guys watching the Olympics on television. Turn to page 52. It's the end of a profile about a Christian comedian. And his name is Stein. And you'll see near the end of it, you'll see the following paragraph. This is talking about this Christian comedian, Stein. Sales of the DVDs and of T-shirts and baseball caps have been brisk at Promise Keepers events. The organization has started to provide Stein, the organization being Promise Keepers, the organization has started to provide Stein with two bodyguards who flank him as he signs autographs. In Albany, in early June, amid all the guys lined up to meet Stein, was a sober-looking, middle-aged man who handed him a DVD to sign and said, "My name is John Rowland. I'm the governor of Connecticut, and I'm a big fan of yours." Parentheses, this was a few weeks before Rowland resigned. John Rowland was going to Promise Keepers events in Albany, New York, and getting a comedian to autograph a CD. This is a comedian named Brad Stein. I don't even know, what exactly to make of that. But, and the Promise Keepers are these guys who are sort of into restoring this idea of, well, Christian manhood and, you know, upright behavior and stuff like that. Although I think part of the idea of Promise Keepers, and I'm sure there's somebody out here who will happily correct me, but I think part of the idea of Promise Keepers is that you do recognize that you have transgressed before, and you repudiate that. You realize that in the past you've lied and broken promises and things like that, and you vow to do better. So maybe in that sense, I don't really quite. If anybody knows what to make of this or has any kind of speculation on it, feel free to share it. Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. Meanwhile, Tom from Bristol. What does Tom want? Hi, Tom.
Hey, speaking of Promise Keepers, you're going to break one right now. Oh, I was just going to say that Central Postal Service is run by heterosexual Sondheim fans who are a little upset that you always portray Sondheim fans as gay.
I'm a big Sondheim fan.
But there's very many heterosexual ones who go to those piano bar festivals.
I know. Well, I'm a heterosexual black Sondheim fan. I mean, how many of those are there? But I'm that. So I recognize that Sondheim fans run the gamut, and it is sort of a little sort of shortcut joke to do that. But would it make you feel better if I sang a few bars of Being Alive or something?
Maybe if you used it as bumper music,
yeah,
you could be redeemed.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'll let you request a Sondheim song. If I have it here, I'll play it. Too many mornings.
The song I Think About You.
That one. Yeah, that's. It's called Losing My Mind.
Losing My Mind, and if you have a. Any version.
Does that prove that I'm a significant Sondheim fan, that you said I Think About You and I actually came up with the title Losing My Mind?
I knew it already.
Yeah.
All right.
And as a African-American Sondheim fan, I think I'm even more unique. Anyway, okay. I'll do what I can about it. Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. Let me bring up another thing that I'm kind of asking for help with. Because I didn't see this. I was coming back from Maine on Friday, so I missed the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. But I've kind of encountered a sentiment. It's not perhaps the prevailing sentiment in America right now, but a significant undercurrent that might be described in the following way. A meme, if you will, that might be described in the following way. Bob and Katie must die. There are a number of people, and I've encountered sort of threads on the web where this is explored in great detail, who were annoyed by the commentary of the opening ceremonies by Bob Costas and Katie Couric, especially to the extent that they sort of, as every country was introduced, they would sort of blurt out, you know, whatever war we ever had with them, or what, you know, how much relief they depend on us for, or that that every country could only be understood in terms of its connection to the United States. But that in general, they were unusually insufferable. Now, I'm not saying this because I didn't see it. But, I mean, I got this initially from a correspondent earlier today. We were appalled at the nationalistic and xenophobic nature of the Couric-Costas commentary. Every country was spoken of in terms of required American relief help or suffered a coup that ended with American troop involvement or something like that. And so I started looking around websites, and there was a lot of that kind of stuff. Here's a comment on one website. I watched the opening ceremonies last night on NBC. It was the most vapid coverage possible. Bob Costas and Katie Couric were jingoistic, callous, ignorant, parochial yahoos. Oh, there's an NBC promo right there. I will not be watching any more of the Olympics, writes this person. And then people talk about other situations where you, other ways in which using DirecTV or streaming video or whatever, you can watch Canadian coverage and or other things that are unfettered and uninterrupted by Bob and Katie. Anyway, I hold no brief against Bob and Katie. They've never done anything wrong to me, but I'm wondering, is that sentiment out there? All right, this is almost my theme song, but I don't have time to play the whole thing. Joining us right now is Bruce and Collins Show Legislator of the Year, Andy Fleischman, making an unscheduled stop on these airwaves. Hello, Andy.
Hey, how are you?
Fine.
So we're on the same wavelength today.
Okay.
Postal Service in West Hartford has been going downhill tremendously.
Yeah.
Had a meeting with the postmaster, mm-hmm. Ms. Falling Star, and she seems to be, frankly, somewhat in denial about what's going on. But we've got another meeting coming up with her for the public.
Yeah.
September 9th at 7 p.m. at the Bishop's Corner Library.
So it's like, Postmistress Falling Star live and uncensored.
She'll be there to talk with the public, to hear what people have to say. We asked her to bring some data on what time carriers are now returning back to the post office, because
mm-hmm.
we've got a lot of people who are saying, you know, they're not getting mail delivered till 5, 6, 7 at night.
Yeah.
And we've also asked her to give us some data on just how long the waits have gotten at, you know, the Bishop's Corner Ranch post office and so forth. So if other people listening share your concerns about what's happened with Postal Service in town, you know, it's their chance to talk to the postmaster on September 9th.
You know, it's this kind of attention to detail and persistence that's made you the Bruce and Collins Show State Legislator of the Year, year after year.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you. It was kind of amusing to me that when I was standing out protesting Postal Service about 6 weeks back, holding a sign, you happened to drive by. Obviously,
that is true.
That was just a total serendipity that
just
ruined
meant, yeah.
my career.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to mention, I did watch some of that Friday coverage of the opening ceremonies mm-hmm. of the Olympics, as much as I could stomach.
Yeah.
And not only was there all this sort of vapid, Americo-centric, you know, palaver that they put out there as people are marching by, but I was struck by the fact that NBC devoted hours to this ceremony and gave only 3 hours in total to the whole Democratic National Convention, where topics like healthcare, education, et cetera, were being discussed. And I had to turn it off not only because of Costas, but also because it just so offended me that we got so little time devoted to the real issues.
I don't know if you heard, but today Obama Baraka won in the high jump. So there is sort of a sense that, you know, it's coming full circle.
Yeah, and I think Alan Pease has been disqualified for not actually coming from the country that he's trying to compete from.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he is trying to compete for Mexico, and they're not buying it. Even Mexico's not
criticized buying it. Hillary Clinton when she did it, but now, you know, he's just trying himself.
We understand. These things happen. All right, thanks very much, Andy Fleischman, who is, in fact, State Legislator of the Year for the Bruce and Collins Show this year and perhaps every year for the foreseeable future. Anyway,
You know, but I don't, listen, I don't want to be part of any kind of feeding frenzy against the U.S. Postal Service. Because to tell you the truth, this is the first time I've ever, I mean, maybe Andy's right. Maybe they're sort of, they're in a bad orbit right now. Maybe they're in a deteriorating orbit. I hadn't been aware of that. I don't necessarily want to be part of any boulder rolling down the hill towards them. I just want my freaking mail. If I get my mail, this issue has no interest to me whatsoever. Now, that's not true, obviously. There's a problem with the Postal Service as a part of the proud community, the confraternity of talk show hosts. I would want to obviously take up the cause of everybody else, but not as enthusiastically.
Me a kiss before you leave me in my imagination.
All right.
My hungry,
I'm going to attempt to actually do some meaty material.
Leave me one thing before.
It's probably unwise, but we'll do it anyway. And there are like a couple of legitimate, semi-legitimate things I wanted to bring up here. Stuff I didn't get to talk about last week or things that have happened since then. This first one actually was kind of pointed out to me by political consultant Roy Occhio Grosso earlier today. High-strung Italian-American political consultant Roy Occhio Grosso. Roy points out that today the news contains more information about the income gap between rich and poor. And to no one's surprise, it's gotten more extreme, gotten worse. And so that it's even more pronounced than it's ever been before. The wealthiest 20% of households, just to give you kind of a sense, in 1973, the wealthiest 20% of households. And usually when we talk about these things, and today when we talk about these things, we're going to talk, you break America up into fifths. So you drinkers should be able to understand that. The wealthiest 20% of American households in 1973 accounted for 44% of total U.S. income. So the upper fifth was getting 44% of the income, which is a disparity right there, but that's what that's why they're the wealthiest people. Anyway, that share jumped to 50% in 2002, while everybody else's share fell. So all the other fifth, the other four-fifths of the American income spectrum, hemorrhaged, basically, money into the top fifth. Okay? Now, that's today's news. Now, a few days ago, we had this controversial report from the Congressional Budget Office, which I know has been interpreted numerous ways, but, I mean, the mainstream way of understanding this. I mean, if you read the National Review, you'll get a different version of this. But basically, with the CBO, which is theoretically, anyway, a nonpartisan research office of Congress, what they came up with was this. One-third of the tax cuts enacted by George W. Bush, one-third of them benefited people with the top 1% of income. So 33% of the cuts went to the people went to 1% of the people, the richest 1% of the people. The report said the top 1% with incomes averaging $1.2 million per year, that's the top 1%, will receive an average of $78,460 in tax cuts this year. And they've seen their total share of the tax burden, or their share of the total tax burden, fall roughly 2 percentage points to 20.1%. Now, households in the middle 20%, the middle fifth, these are people with incomes averaging $57,000 per year, will receive an average cut of about $1,000. Taxpayers whose incomes range from $51,000 to about $75,000 saw their share of federal tax payments increase. In other words, they're paying a larger percent of the overall tax burden. And the point of this is that these two things are not unconnected. I mean, basically, the Bush, as we've been sort of saying all along, as the Bush administration basically said, I mean, one of the things that George W. Bush ran on was the idea that he was going to cut taxes on the rich. So he cuts taxes on the rich, and guess what? The gap between rich and poor, or rich and middle even, increases. And whenever you bring stuff up like this up, as Roy was pointing out to me, what you hear back is, all right, you're engaging in class warfare. It's pretty common for the right to accuse the left of this. You're engaging in class warfare. Well, no, the class warfare is, in fact, rigging the economic system so rich people get richer and everybody else either stagnates or slides back. That's what's class warfare. And, I mean, pointing it out is not engaging in class warfare. Pointing it out is just pointing out the class warfare is already going on. And, you know, the other argument, that if there's people picking up their phones right now to make the other argument, which is to say, look,
Of course, the rich benefit the most because they pay the most taxes. So anytime you cut taxes, even if you cut them evenly across the board, the rich are going to benefit preponderantly. Yeah, but, you know, here's my answer to that. Look, I'm stupid, and I could sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and work out a tax cut that was targeted at middle-income people and where middle-income people benefited exclusively and until, in fact, substantive tax relief was delivered to them, to say that middle fifth, and then go up to the next fifth and deliver substantial relief to them. And then, if there's any money left to go around, any relief left to go around, only then would the top fifth get any. I mean, you could target it. You can weight tax relief any way you want. And if you really want to help the middle class, you can. And it's, you know, it's sophistry to say that, oh, well, we just cut it across the board, and so just by accident, you know, the rich did incredibly well. Well, you could say, look, they don't need the help. There's a bunch of people who do. Let's help them first, and then we'll help everybody else. That's pretty much what Kerry and Edwards are saying, but I don't know if they're saying it very effectively. Anyway, let's talk to Holden from Glastonbury. Hi, Holden.
Hey, how you doing, Colin?
C'est la chanson de Clara, la jolie musique.
Because of all these steroids and performance-enhancing drugs being peed into the sewers of Athens, there's now an alligator that can swim the 200 meters in 1 minute and 45 seconds and high jump. It's time for Sports Antoine, the very French sports discussion segment of Michel Hamilton, and special guest, Dr. Courtney Gain, a science consultant and editor to the Bruce and Colin Show, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer. Welcome aboard, Dr. Gain. Oh, I don't hear Dr. Gain. I'll press her button again. Hello, welcome aboard, Dr. Gain.
Hello.